This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. Time now for my weekly visit with John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. John, how are you?
I'm doing just great today, as long as I stay indoors.
That's true. It is a very muggy and sweltering week here in the nation's capital. John, let's start with the president's first televised address from the Oval Office. For the most part, regardless of party, it did not get rave reviews. What was your sense?
Well, my sense is that it's always a case of an address that should be delivered immediately and yet is coming as we are weeks into the crisis involving BP and the Gulf. The president did not rally the American people on what has turned out to be one of the worst disasters in history. And on top of it, his trips to the Gulf, while now becoming more frequent, didn't come until 12 days after the crisis hit. I might add that Katrina is always cited as being a political body blow to George W. Bush. Well, he was on the scene in Air Force One, flying over the disaster in Mississippi, Louisiana, and Alabama 2 days after it hit, and he made 8 trips subsequently. In the same 45-day period, President Obama has made 4 trips.
John, let's talk about the major development since that speech, and that, of course, is this fund, at least to begin with, funded with $20 billion of BP money to compensate those impacted by the massive oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico. Today at the subcommittee hearing, Congressman Joe Barton, top Republican on the Energy and Commerce Committee, called it a shakedown, called it a tragedy of the first order, basically saying that government has no business to demand money from a private corporation. What do you make of that?
Well, Press Secretary Robert Gibbs said from the White House that he was appalled by Barton's words and reputedly aided them in no uncertain terms. Although I normally find myself more in agreement with Joe Barton than Robert Gibbs, I have to say I draw the line. I'm not certain that Republicans or anyone in the field of commentary on public policy wants to be aligned with a major business, which, although it has certainly tried to cap the oil spill, has had some problems doing so. BP is not without sin, nor is the federal government. And I am curious to find that Joe Barton, someone I've known since he was first elected to Congress 26 years ago, taking this kind of tact. That said, the idea of an escrow account or a private fund to help victims is a good idea. BP should be commended for it. What we should also do is verify and be very, very careful when the federal government has a hand in handing out this money. Remember, TARP money was thought to be used just exclusively for bailout of financial firms. It's been used for other things.
John, we've obviously talked about those who have taken a hit over this, namely BP, of course, and also the president has suffered as a result of this and certain members of his administration. Flipping it around, though, anyone whose political stock has significantly risen as a result of how they've handled this?
Bobby Jindal. I just saw a poll this morning which showed that well over 60% of Louisianans approve of the way their governor has handled the crisis. And remember, Governor Jindal has been on the scene on a regular basis and has also chastised the administration when he felt they weren't up to the job. He is no fan of BP either and has made this clear, but he does not become a demagogue over the issue. He strikes the right balance. I would have to guess, without any polling information, that two other people who are going to gain from this are the Plaquemines County Parish President, Billy Nungesser, whose father I once interviewed when he was a political leader several years ago, and the person who appears to be the most dedicated, has the least partisan bones in his body, and is in command, and that is Coast Guard Commandant Admiral Thad Allen.
John, let's move to pure politics now, and let's spend our last couple of minutes in the Carolinas. Let's start in North Carolina, the 2nd Congressional District. By most accounts, Congressman Bob Etheridge wasn't supposed to have a particularly difficult time winning re-election. That's up in the air now after the viral internet video of him accosting two supposed college students working on a report and simply asking if he supported the Obama agenda. The congressman grabbed one of the students, demanded to know who they were. Tempest in a teapot, one day story, or is this going to haunt him down the stretch of this campaign?
In the age of YouTube and the cell phone cameras, this is going to have life. 14 years ago, Bob Etheridge was elected to Congress over an incumbent who had some questionable fallout from driving on the wrong side of the road and passing someone who charged that he ran them off. In that case, a small incident was built up into a major crisis. So too will this incident. And I might add, he has an absolutely lovely Republican opponent who's married to a doctor and has spent a lifetime in the medical profession. Pretty good field to be in this year.
Renee Elmers, and actually I just interviewed her today. You can find that interview at worldnetdaily.com and dateline.radioamerica.org to hear her thoughts on that incident as well as the campaign in general. John, let's move a little bit south now to South Carolina. Democrats in that state still not exactly sure what happened in their primary a couple of weeks ago when Alvin Green, who did no campaigning and by just about every account is probably not the best choice for this job, but he was able to defeat the Democratic Party establishment candidate. The Democrats have tried to allege Republican chicanery here. Now they're thinking about calling for another election because they don't want Green on the ballot against Senator Jim DeMint this fall. Just how big of a mess is this?
It's not going to happen. There are no fifth quarters in football, no 10th innings in baseball, and no reruns in primaries or elections. What is done is done. And Mr. Green, I might add, ran in a primary which had a turnout of about one-fourth that of the Republican primary, the bulk of whom were African-American voters. No one wants to say this, but they voted for Mr. Green, an African-American Army veteran, over a white candidate, Nick Rawls, who was the choice of the establishment and by most accounts is not a dedicated campaigner. He took it for granted, and this is the price he pays. Now, as for the filing fee of $10,000 and whether or not it came from Mr. Green's unemployment checks, I tend to doubt it. I also tend to doubt Republicans would gamble on something like this when Jim DeMint was going to win easily over any Democrat. And I would say that those who are charging foul, crying foul, should just look to the Democratic Party and the world of political consultants in Charleston and Columbia.
John, real quickly before we let you go, staying in South Carolina, we've got a couple of runoffs on Tuesday. Nikki Haley barely required a runoff. She'll be up against Congressman Gresham Barrett. She is considered a favorite. And Bob Inglis fighting for his life in the 4th Congressional District. Who do you like in those two races?
Nikki Haley stunned everyone by spending the least money topping a field of four candidates. It's getting mean and ugly, but her magnificent charisma and the fact the whole world likes an outsider is going to carry her to victory easily. As for Bob Inglis, I interviewed Trey Gowdy, district attorney and his primary opponent. He never really recovered from voting for the financial bailout, and he never really recovered from opposing the troop surge in Iraq. And those are substantive issues that upset people, but most importantly, he was the only Republican from South Carolina to vote to reprimand Joe Wilson of South Carolina when he cried, "You lie," during an address from Barack Obama. I won't judge the merits of that or debate civility. I'll say I don't think that's a good position to condemn Joe Wilson in a Republican primary, and Bob Inglis will lose to Trey Gowdy.
John, we'll be watching. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, and looking forward to many good continued discussions with you and our friends in Radio Land.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.